I think some Marcus thinking? With us. Mark too. Oh.
Yeah,
less than a minute, guys. All right. So, Mark on the short intro and get right into it. Finish up the hour as best we can.
It's good. It's
good evening. My name is Chris Carr, and welcome to Bigfoot and a Bunny. Kristen won't be joining us tonight. She is actually in the hospital with her son, 12-year-old son, whom I want to give a big shout out to. His name is Jacob Costa. Hey, Jake. We hope he's feeling better soon and is out of there. they're going to get you fixed up, buddy, and just want to give you a hello from myself and the staff at United Public Radio. However, we've got a good show for you tonight, an excellent show. I've got a guest to talk to. His name is Mark Fiorentino. He's a self-taught metaphysician who worked as an accomplished troubleshooter for technology companies like IBM and Harris Government Systems. He worked primarily as a computer and electronics technician and developed many award-winning state-of-the-art software programs that solve problems concerning failure analysis of electronic assemblies and computer systems. He ties Einstein to aliens. You guys are going to love this guy. Welcome, Mark.
Hello. Nice to be here. Thank you.
How are you doing tonight?
Very good, thanks.
Sorry for the clumsy intro. I am a master of clumsy introductions.
Oh, it was fine. Thank you.
How are you doing? How did you get into this stuff? As I understand it, you were a fan of Einstein at a young age. You had some other unusual experiences in your childhood.
Yeah. Around 10 years old, I was asked to write a report about a saint that was born on the same day as me when I was in catechism school. And I couldn't find one. There was no internet then. All I could do was look on the calendar. And I happened to see that Albert Einstein was born on my birthday. So what I decided to do was a report on him instead. So I started reading about him. I got the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I came across the unified field theory while I was reading about him. And that just struck me as the most sensible idea I ever heard. It just resonated with me, and I could never get it out of my mind after that. And so that kind of got me on the path, just as somebody who was just interested and was entertaining, like a hobby. I never thought that I would get to this point where I would solve the unified field theory problem, as I have done in the book. And there is a little math involved, but that's a very difficult problem. That's probably the world's most difficult problem. So if you're a scientist out there and you want to see how the solution worked from a philosophical and metaphysical perspective, then definitely you should check out the book, because the solution is in there and it's extremely sensible.
Excellent. And I'm sorry. That's why I said it was a clumsy intro, because I forgot to mention you're the author of a book titled Master of Reality. Now, this is going to be an odd thing. You share a birthday with Albert Einstein. I share a birthday and had an early interest in Ozzy Osbourne.
Things are getting weird.
That's a funny thing. Although we're talking opposite ends of the spectrum, I think.
Yeah.
that's hilarious. Yeah. But Master of Reality is a Black Sabbath record. And I didn't know if that was an influence on the title. And when you mentioned unified field theory, maybe can you break that down to us in a layman's term so that our average listener knows what you're talking about when you say that?
Sure. Einstein had a very good idea. He thought that electromagnetism and gravity should emerge as aspects of a single fundamental field, a field being, how do I describe it? Like a continuous object, a substance within space, and actually space itself is a field. It's continuous. And he thought that, as many scientists in that time thought, that there was an ether, which is another way, another word for saying that space. Space is an ether. It's a substance, a quasi-elastic solid. So they were working on that being the fundamental field. And the other fields like magnetism, magnets, electrostatic field like thunder, you know, lightning. Mm-hmm. These fields, these, you know, charges and magnetic fields were somehow the same field, but different configurations. And so that's the goal of the unified field theory, is to connect them and see how they transform from one to the other, from the fundamental field, which is the ether, according to my theory.
That's really interesting. And these are things people take for granted. Magnetism, you know, is in our day-to-day lives, and nobody has a great explanation. You know,
you are exactly right.
You know, very we good. Take it for granted. Electricity, I should say. Really, there's no really great explanation for that. We know how to manipulate it, and we know how to control it and use it different ways. But when we say, well, what is it? It starts to get a little complicated.
Well, that's why I get into that in detail in my book. I describe the charge, the Coulomb force, the electric charge, in detail, how it deforms space, how it bends it. Just like gravity, it's a bending of space. And then the magnetic field, that's another type of bending. And that only occurs when charge moves. So charge is a twist of space. And when it moves through space, the reaction of the space that it's moving within is torsional. It rotates because the charge is twisted. So as it goes by, the space rotates at 90 degrees. And that makes perfect sense. So that's what electromagnetism is, basically. That's how they're connected. Maxwell came across and figured all of that out. It's all a field. But then there was still gravity. That's another deformation. And that had to be connected somehow through moving electromagnetic charges. And that's what I do and I explain in the book. It all connects very logically, a sensible way. No quantum mechanics is required, because this is a field theory and quantum mechanics is not necessary. There's no probabilities that we have to figure out. There's nothing like that. It's just classical field theory. And basically, that's what the book goes into great detail in describing. It establishes the proof of the ether, and then as the fundamental field, and then I describe the other three fields, and I link gravity to electromagnetism.
Now, as much as you are obviously on the science end of things, you've had psychic experiences, which is something a lot of people don't equate with science. Mm-hmm. I do personally, but I know not everybody does, and it goes into that kind of woo, if you will, right?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I have, unlike a regular physicist, I also tap into the full reality spectrum. That's why the book is called Master of Reality. There's more to it than scientific experiments and mathematical formalism. There is the other side, the source of where everything comes from. The ether, this universe, the creation. And so through the spiritual encounters I've had, I was absolutely convinced that there is an afterlife. There is a God. There is a Jesus. There is a Mohammed. There is a Moses. There is any, you know, the other religions. They're all valid because God is a universal being. But since God was the creator, I also explored that avenue, because who better to find out how things work than the person that created that thing? And in this case, this universe is very definitely created by God. And it's confirmed through much evidence coming from testimonials from near-death experiences. Over and over again, people come back and say, God has told me he created this universe. And even in one case, he showed how it was done. And so there's overwhelming evidence if you allow that testimonial evidence to be put into this bigger picture. And so I could go with you and start how I got the connection to the spiritual realm and tell you a little bit about that.
Sure. Please do.
Well, it all started. You see, these two things, my interest in physics and the spiritual connection, are in parallel, but they're moving toward each other. They're supporting each other in the end. And the spiritual realm really connects me to this time and what I'm doing right now. So it starts out in 1974. I'm 19 years old, and I go to a psychic, me and a bunch of friends, for fun. We want to get our fortunes told, you know. I heard about it when I was in community college, and I says, hey, bunch of guys, let's go out to Casadega. I don't know if you've ever heard of that place. Have you ever heard of Casadega?
I haven't heard of Casadega.
It's
well, it sounds vaguely familiar, but
it's spiritualist capital of the world, according to, it's in Florida.
Oh, okay.
And it's like a town full of psychics, and they have their own spiritualist church, and they're actually Christian, I think, for the most part, or at least they used to be back in those days. And so I went, and we went there. It was a very cold October day in Florida, blustery, overcast, very spooky. It was perfect. And we drove into this little town. It's basically in the woods in the central Florida. And on the radio, this song plays, and it turns out to be the theme of my life, because there's a paragraph in there that I never got out of my head once I heard it. And it goes like this: distant hands in foreign lands are turning hidden wheels, causing things to come about which no one seems to feel. All invisible from where we stand, the connections come to pass, and though too strange to comprehend, they affect us nonetheless. That becomes my life. It's everyone's life. So basically what I'm saying here with this thing is saying that you're being guided. We are all being guided. So this is not just unique to me. So at this first psychic, I have a very normal reading. Nothing unusual. You know, I'm going to get married, have two children. She predicts my electronics career, which I wasn't really into at that time. I was into other stuff, media and all that sort of thing. But that really didn't work out. And I eventually did get into electronics. Everything she predicted for me came true. 100% accuracy. But it was very normal. There was no hint of anything unusual in my future other than the things she told me. So then my other friend, he went in, his name was Duff, and he went through, and he had a very normal reading too. And then we both left, and we got in the car because we were going up to Daytona Beach to meet with the other guys.
Yes.
who got scared off, because when we were all looking for a place, this big tree branch blew off the tree and hit their car. They got scared and they ran off, and they left us two guys there. So we stayed, and we finally found a psychic. Her name, of course, was Martha McKay. And so on the way to Daytona, things get interesting, because he's telling me about his reading and, you know, his spirit guides. And I tell him about mine, a man and a woman. And in his case, it was an American Indian, which I thought was cool. And he says, as we're talking, he says, but hey, Mark, that's really something about you, what she said about you. And I says, what are you talking about? I had pretty normal, nothing unusual. She says, oh, yeah, no, you're going to be famous someday. You're going to discover or invent something. That part is vague in my head. And I went through the rest of my life thinking I was going to invent something. But that's basically stuck in my mind when he's told me that. Because he says, why didn't she tell me herself when I was in there? So I figured that was deliberate. They told her not to tell me when I was in there. And I guess it's because I would have asked a lot of more questions, because I would have liked to find out what they're talking about. Because the first thing she said to me when I came in there, I remember this very clearly, he says, in your final days, you're going to be a spiritual teacher. I thought, wow, how is that going to happen? I had no idea.
Sure. At a young age, that's an interesting thing to
I was say, not right? particularly all that spiritual. You know, I was just a normal guy. You know, I went to church every once in a while, but, you know, nothing special. So that tweaked my interest a little. You know, I was trying to figure out how that would ever work out. But that thing that he told me in there got my interest up. And, you know, I couldn't quite ever get it out of my mind. And for a long time, I tried doing inventing, you know, things, mainly perpetual motion machines. But I figured that would be significant enough that, you know, I could get into the spiritual teachings or whatever. But the next thing that happened, now I'm giving you a quick rundown. Another psychic that I attended at the community college where I was going was giving a lecture, and he's a very good psychic. His name is Russ Burgess, and he had us put questions on a piece of paper, and he was blindfolded, you know, three different ways, and he would pick the question out of the thing, and then he would talk about it. And he picked mine first, and I knew as soon as he picked the paper, it was mine. I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck going up. Mm-hmm. And the question I asked was, of course, about this invention, because this is on my mind. He's a psychic. Maybe he'll connect some more, give me a little more information. And he paused as he was reading it, and in his mind, because he couldn't actually see the paper. And he says, right. You will succeed, but it will take you much longer than you think. And that's all he could say. And he turned out to be right, but it was 45 more years before I get to this final prediction to come true. Then I had more evidence. So now, you know, I'm going to another psychic at this point who's at the community college. Her name is Ann Gaiman. And she was an extremely powerful, good psychic. And I was going to her because my mother was very ill, and I was thinking of dropping out of tech school to go help my father take care of her. And so I wanted to ask if that was the right thing to do. And I was walking, my wife and I at the time were walking up to her in the auditorium before the lecture. She looked at me in a strange way. And as I got to her, and I can't remember if I asked her the question or she just started talking, but it was like an instantaneous response. And she started telling me about, you must not quit school. As I saw you walking up, all these angels shot by you in a very concerned, frightened way and said, told me to tell you, do not quit school. You must complete this school. And I thought, why do all these angels care whether I go to tech school? And I thought for certain they were saying, yeah, you should go, you know, take this time off, help your dad and whatever, and do this. But they said, no. You need to complete this education. Then she went on. And
that's really interesting. Yeah, it is not what you would expect, right?
No, I expected the opposite answer. And I thought, well, there's something going on here that I don't understand. There's something more important going on that I don't know what it is, but there's something big. And then I went to another counselor in 85, 86 for marriage counseling, as it turns out. And this counselor says the same thing. She says, first words out of her mouth, you will be a spiritual teacher later in life. Now I'm thinking, well, this is quite a pattern going on here. People over vast distance in time are saying the same thing. They're really talking to the other side. And not only that, but the woman also said something that only I knew that was in my head. I used to pray to my mother who had passed away now. In this time, and I used to pray to her, and I used to imagine her sitting in this yellow golden chair near the foot of my bed, and we would just have conversations in my mind as I would pray to her and you know, tell her about my day or whatever. And June says, your mother says she has heard you, and she's been sitting in the chair by your bed just like you asked. Nobody knew. Nobody knew that. I never even told my wife. There was no way she could look that up on the internet. There, for you people listening out there, you should take this as proof positive there is an afterlife. We don't die. And they, you know, we continue on. Our consciousness lives in this spirit realm, this other dimension, which is called heaven by most people. And goes on. I see, you know, there's a whole lot more, and I'm going to try to skip through a lot of it because you can take up the whole hour on it. But, you know, I see guardian angels in my bedroom at night through this crisis period in my life, and they comfort me by doing certain things that let me know that they're real and they're there. And even at one point, my life is saved by a guardian angel. And I'll tell you this story real quick. I'm driving home from IBM. I come to this T intersection every day, and I choose to go left or right. Right is faster, but more traffic, and it's more hectic. Left goes through the country roads. It's a little longer, but it's a lot more peaceful. Most every day, I turn left. And I'm thinking to myself as I approach the intersection, I'm going to go left today. And as I have that thought, then I hear a voice say, "Don't go that way." And I'm not talking, I heard it in my head. It was like a person was right next to my left ear, and I heard it audibly. So I quick turned around in the car. There was nobody there. And I said, "Well, yeah, I don't know what that was. That sounded very real." And so I continued on, and it said it again, "Don't go that way." And of course,
clear audience.
Yeah, which is the only time that's ever happened to me in my life. One and only time. Of course, me being the science and the skeptic and the doubter, I, of course, went that way, not realizing that I was heading right toward an exit point where I could actually be killed and be gone. But, you know, you're young, you think that can't happen. So I'm thinking, well, maybe
push
there's
the boundaries.
Well, I have to know if this is real. What I just heard was real. So I'm going that way, and I'm going to see what happens. And if there's going to be an accident, it's probably going to be a head-on collision, so I got to be looking ahead. So I get about three-quarters of the way there, and sure enough, there's this truck losing control out ahead. And I'm behind this van thinking I'm going to get some protection, but he bails out and goes way off the road. And here's this pickup truck heading right at me. And I turned the wheel as hard as I could turn and got out of the way by just inches as that guy went screaming by and then finally spun around and was sitting in the middle of the road with all these cars all over the place because he was going back and forth, you know, almost hitting everybody as he went. And I thought, well, I guess the next time I hear a voice warning me not to go that way, I better listen this time. So these sort of things continue on for many years in the 90s up until a certain point where I leave Charlotte and I come to back home to Winter Haven, where I live now. And so there's a 20-year gap or 22 or so more year gap where I don't really talk to psychics anymore because everything in my life's okay. That's why I was going to psychics and not really to pursue this theory, you know. So I finally do go to a psychic here because of a strange phenomena that happens. This bat flies into my house while I'm making a fire, and I go to get it and grab it, you know, with this case. And you know, you got to watch out with bats, and you know, they have that disease.
Sure, that again rabies. Goes back to Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's weird.
I do like one of the songs, Going Through Changes.
Yeah.
I like that song.
I like that one, Volume 4.
I catch it, and I set it free outside, but I notice there's a lot of fluid in the bottom of the bag. So, that's the saliva or something. So I'm washing it out, and it sprays up onto my face, some of it. And I say, oh, my God, no. Wow. It goes in my eye. I could have rabies, and you only got a few days to get the shot. So I'm calling up the people asking, can you just give me the shot anyway? I said, Mr. Fiorentino, you weren't scratched. You weren't bitten. You're going to be all right. Don't worry about it. So they wouldn't give me the shot. So now I can't stop thinking about it, and I'm forced to find the psychic. So I go back to the Charlotte area on the internet. I'm looking for that psychic that I went to many years ago, Patty Groninger, but she's long gone. I don't know where she is. But I find Tamara Richardson, the Southern Belle medium, and I make an appointment with her, and that, because I'm going to ask her, do I have rabies? Did I get it? Did I get infected? And so, no. The bottom line, the answer was no, I'm fine. But I had just finished this book, and I says, you know, I've been working on this book for 4 years. Let me just ask, because there's a, you know, I have the theory of super relativity in there, and I, you know, I, it makes sense to me. It seems right. Let me just ask and see what she says. And then everything gets, starts to get strange, because my mother is speaking now, and she's the mother, my mother and father, who are both passed away, are saying, we want this lady to go into a channel. She needs to channel, and she knows how to do that. And she was a little scared because that's a scary thing to do. So, okay, they start channeling, and they're saying, yeah, your theory is right. And so I'm kind of shocked. I turn to my wife and look, and I let out this moan like, holy cow, it's actually right. And then Einstein comes through, and Ray Bradbury, and Jesus, and all these people. I'm getting overwhelmed. I'm thinking, how can this be? This is like so surreal that they're doing this. And one of the things that really, really convinced me that she was actually talking to the other side was the first thing Einstein says. Because I know myself, while I was writing this book, I kept talking to him in my head. I says, Albert, I need you to say the words contraction and gravity in the same sentence somewhere, because that's what I think gravity is, a contraction of space. So with that said, now I'm going to describe to you what Tamara was saying Einstein was doing. So she's asking me, why is Einstein, he's got his hands spread apart, then he brings them together. He spreads them apart. He brings them together. Why is he doing that? And I get these chills over him because he's answering my question that I had all these years. He's telling me that space is contracted. So that's the only way you could do it, really, from the other side and make it clear. So mm-hmm. I says, holy cow. That's the one thing that I was asking him for the last 4 years. And he's finally answered the question. Gravity is a contraction of space.
So would anti-gravity be an expansion of space?
Exactly right. So once I knew that for sure, that's the same conclusion I had. And then I started researching the anti-gravity idea, but I was already much onto that idea already because I knew magnetism was in fact the way to cause space to expand. When you rotate, and I'll give you a little simple experiment you can do at home. Go out to the dollar store and buy a little egg of silly putty. Take that silly putty, go to a comics or whatever, and you press it down onto the comic. You go see a picture come up from the newspaper. Twist the silly putty. Watch what happens to the picture. You will see it stretch. That's exactly what magnetism does to space. And when you stretch space, it becomes less dense. And it actually causes another type of field, which I call the inverse hyperbolic field, which is the anti-gravity field. When you cause space to stretch and thin out like that, it actually is less dense and its pressure is less. So that is the anti-gravity field, and that's the experiment I asked people to do in the last part of my book. I say, do this experiment, suspend a heavy non-metallic object over the strong magnetic field. So if you're a scientist who works in one of these labs where there's high magnetic, you know, superconducting magnets or something, it's a simple experiment. You make a strong magnetic field underneath the object, and you'll see that it weighs less, but it's going to block the gravitational field from coming directly up from the ground. And the stronger that field becomes, the lighter that object will become. So I give several different versions in the book. You do this, you're going to prove for sure, proof positive, that magnetism can be used to shield gravity. It can also be used to create a bubble in space and an expansion of space, like you said, so that it could provide propulsion. And that's vitally important, because I'm not talking about just going at the speed of light, because gravity is stretching that space and making it thinner inside of that bubble. You can go any speed you want. And Maxwell's equation, which is the speed of light, is determined by 1 over the square root of permittivity times permeability, basically says that if you control permittivity and permeability of space, which is controlled by how much gravitational field there is or how much magnetic field there is, if you have more gravitational field, those two values, properties of space, go up, slows down the speed of light. If you have a strong magnetic field there, you will stretch space out, thin it out, and the permittivity and permeability will drop. And then the speed of light value, the constant, which isn't really constant, will change. And so you could go 1,000 times the speed of light, and that's what we really need to do to get to other star systems. We can't just go at the speed of light.
Right. And of course, this begs the question, is this the alien technology
that's
out there and how they're able to visit us?
It is. And as a kid, I remember reading one of the Project Blue Book, it might have been incidences, where the Air Force people would take magnometers out to the landing sites. And I'm reading this and saying, oh, you know something we don't know. Why would you take a magnometer, which is a device that measures magnetic field strength, why would you be taking that to the landing site? You already know something. And one of these sites, they picked up some grass and they checked it, and it was magnetized. And I said, oh, I'm going to remember this, because it takes a really powerful magnet to magnetize something like a blade of grass. And there's more evidence. I don't know if you're familiar with the Belgian wave.
I'm not. Could you explain?
Yeah, that's a series of sightings that happened over Belgium in the 1980s, late 1980s.
Okay.
Well, there is one photograph that was taken by somebody. They were triangular-shaped UFOs.
Okay. Yeah.
And at that time, they were still using film. There wasn't digital cameras yet, or at least they weren't out in any great extent.
So Photoshop.
There's no Photoshop. He got a pretty good close picture of this triangular shaped UFO. And so there was a lot of analysis done on that. And they actually had a physicist analyze it. And he noticed something. He put it under the magnifying glass, or the other device that blows up stuff, microscopes, and he noticed a pattern in the crystal halides, in the emulsion of the film. He said there was what they call the negative showed signs of being magnetized. Basically, the negative itself was magnetized. So he was close enough to this UFO that the powerful magnetic fields that were being emitted actually magnetized the emulsion, and they were arranged like iron filings that were exposed to a magnetic field.
That's really interesting.
The physicists declared the triangular UFO must be magnetically propelled. So there's I'm sure more incidences where they've noticed magnetic fields and UFOs, and there's really no other reasonable explanation for how they move, because there's no jets or rockets coming out of these things. There's nothing that anybody can see. It's got to be a spatial bias field, and obviously they're using magnetism. So that's
I think it's interesting that you bring up magnetism is somewhat contagious, if you will. If you handle magnets enough, your hands will start to feel magnetic. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I don't. I've never experienced that, but maybe that's so. I've
done certain path work that involved handling the magnets to a degree where you've got them in your hands for like hours, literally. And
you start I have to some really strong magnets. Cool. Yeah, and I stay away from them because of some operation I had, and I don't want to mess with it. But I you know, I've done a lot of experiments with magnets and such.
Right. But... And what you're proposing, though, here is that the magnetism, being around a strong magnet, can magnetize something that's basically not magnetic, like the blades of grass in the film that you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's enough evidence out there right now that most folks in the UFO community are pretty well aware of the fact that magnets. So I'm not really saying something new here. Mm-hmm. I'm just explaining how it works and why it works, which is something that physicists really can't do at this point. And there's a section in my book where I talk about Richard Feynman tries to explain it, and he really fails epically.
You mentioned breaking the speed of light. Now, that seems like a, you know, like a no-no, I think, to the layperson. And how would that work? And you don't think anything happens by going faster than light? Or
this is a very excellent question, because it's very dangerous to go past the speed of light. And this is where physicists and I are going to disagree, because I feel that special relativity has been badly misinterpreted. And what I'm saying is, when you accelerate to the speed of light using rockets or whatever, I'm saying the contraction of space actually does physically happen to you. Your clock will slow down, and you will see it slow down as you approach the speed of light. You will feel an inertial drag that will pin you to the back of the chair when you start hitting 90, 99% the speed of light. You won't be able to function. Your craft will be flattened. None of this, a scientist would say, would be real. And that's where we disagree. But they don't believe in the ether either. And it's the interaction between the moving object and the ether is what causes all these Lorentz transformations, which the physicists will understand what I'm saying, but I'm sure nobody else is going to understand. But I'm saying those are real, absolute occurrences that will happen when you accelerate. So, but in my theory, when you use the thing called the slip wave, which will protect you, which the UFOs use, they use this slip field, which basically forms a bubble around your spacecraft. That's why they use simple geometries like a saucer or the cigar shape. Cigar shape is absolutely perfect, because you can make concentric rings of magnetic coils and envelop the whole ship. You don't want anything protruding. You'll notice that rarely the UFOs have anything sticking out of them, like on the Close Encounters of the Third Time. That thing would never fly with all the antennas and stuff. Star Trek would not work. The Enterprise, you can't be outside of the field when you're breaking the speed of light. You'll be instantly killed. Destroyed.
You're bursting a lot of bubbles out there right now. Just to let you know.
I know. Not, you know, what do you mean? Well, you can go faster. You know, the Star Trek, I think they only went, you know, warp 8, warp 9, which is 8 times or 9 times the speed of light. That's pathetically slow. That's not practical. If you want to go to Proxima Centauri, 4.2 light years from now, and you go at the speed of light, it's going to take you 4.2 years. Right. That's intolerable.
It's like us trying to get to Mars at this point.
You got to get there in 5 or 10 minutes or an hour, because it's much safer. Because while you're breaking the speed of light, if the containment field, the slipway field, breaks down when you're going faster than the speed of light, it's instant death. There's no coming back from that. There's no, oh, I'll fix this, you know, in an hour. It's instantaneous. The field collapse. You're going beyond the speed of light. It's you turn into, if you're lucky, a little miniature black hole, and it's over.
If you're lucky.
So you need to get.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, you need to get where you're going quickly. And you have to have redundant systems of coils and all this stuff to make it safe. So just in case one of the coils fails, which is a room temperature superconducting coil, which I suspect we have, but I don't know for sure. That's one of the things we need to develop. That's why I want physicists working on all this stuff. They first have to figure out that magnetism will do this. So if they do the experiment, and enough people do it all over the world, I'm open sourcing this thing. I'm basically saying, I'm not patenting it. not patenting the idea, just go out and prove me right. And everybody, we can advance, because there's many great things we can build if we have this technology, a super ambulance, drones that can deflect meteors from coming inbound meteors and stuff. We can protect the planet using this technology. We can go from one of my favorite little fantasies is just getting in my supercar, as I call it, and going to Paris for breakfast. I could do it in 5 minutes. A hovercraft made from this technology could get you there in 5 minutes, have a nice breakfast, do a little shopping. For lunch, I go to Rome, another 5 minutes. I have some pasta, do a little more shopping. Then I get a little tired. I come home. I'm back in my home bed at 3 p.m. You can't do that with a jet. It's just not possible.
No, not even your own jet.
Not even your own jet. Right. A new age, and we can actually have this. This can be real. This is can be something in our lifetime we can see, but we have to get to the point where they acknowledge that magnetism can make the anti-gravity field a reality. And unfortunately, our government has been very good about covering up that. And there has been people that have discovered it and were quietly moved into positions where they could not talk about it anymore.
I loved your your idea of open source, and that kind of sounds like Tesla back in the days of a Tesla versus Edison,
right?
The government may have been trying to cover up some of the things that he was doing as well. Why do you feel that they're trying to cover up this technology?
That's a good question. It's very simple, straightforward answer. It's all about the strategic military advantage. He who owns the skies rules the world. And he who has an anti-gravity flying saucer that can literally fly circles around our fastest jets or missiles, I mean, quite literally can do that, is obviously in control of things. So this technology is going to be kept secret as long as they can possibly keep it secret. My hope is now, with the recent sightings and off the coast of California, the Tic Tacs and all that, I don't know if you're familiar with those.
Yes.
The Navy
released the footage,
actually released it. This is unprecedented.
Maybe it is. And there's so much going on in the world, and people just aren't paying attention to. There's some amazing things being put on TV, right? It's just going right over people's heads.
I mean, just think about it. We discover anti-gravity, that's like graduating. And we stop being terrestrial beings and we go to being celestial beings. It's like, I'm sure we'll be able to meet people from other planets and learn about their technology, learn about their philosophies, religion, all of that stuff can be opened up, and we can be exposed to many wondrous and great truths. It could be a utopian society if we choose to use this technology wisely. And I am hoping and praying that we do, because there's a lot of good that can come from it.
Do you think the government's using it now?
Yes. Do I know that for sure? No. Have I witnessed it? No. I'm not going to say that I was a spy or a secret agent. I don't know any more than anybody else who's read the same things that are out there now. I suspect that we did, capture some UFO crashes, Roswell and so forth. We reverse engineered the technology, and they are somehow obtained. There was two critical things the U.S. Air Force has been looking for ever since the mid-40s. They've been looking for, they were in all of the high magnetics labs. If you look back, you'll see this, the U.S. Air Force is sponsoring every high magnetics lab in America and maybe even in other countries, because they wanted that research into magnetics. They're also very interested in room temperature superconducting wire, because that's what's needed to build the powerful magnets. And the other thing they're interested in is a very advanced power source. A UFO doesn't, you know, you can't use some alkaline energizers to power these things. I'm talking megawatts minimum, maybe even gigawatts of power going through those coils. You got to really throw some current into those coils to get the magnetic fields of hundreds of Teslas, which is needed to bend space enough that you can, you know, modify it the way it needs to be modified so that you can travel through it at high speed. So you need a power source, which is going to have to be maybe as large as a basketball, but can somehow throw out megawatts of power. And you need the coils. You need these basic items before you can build a UFO. Somehow they must have either got these items from some other race of beings that they're in contact with, or maybe they were able to reverse engineer it. I don't know, but that's what you need to get this ball rolling so that we can have a society that has the free society where everybody has access to this technology.
Do you suppose that possibly the Tic Tacs and other more recently dropped footage may be our own technology and put out there as a bluff?
Well, it's possible. But what makes the Tic Tac incident interesting is that they're going to an underwater base off the coast of Mexico, which then tends to make me think that that's probably alien technology. But I've thought the same thing you just thought. I says, well, this could be our people, the Air Force, testing our reaction to our own technology. Using, mm-hmm. you know, well, how will the F-16 pilot react? Can he try and shoot it down? Can he do anything about it? Can he pursue it? And they know they can't, but they want to see how the people react. There could be that going on. There's also been incidences during the Vietnam War where we encountered UFOs in battle, and they kicked our ass. But I don't think these were American UFOs. I think it's possible that the Chinese may have done the same thing. They may have captured their own Roswell out there in China somewhere, because sure. these guys were hostile. UFOs are usually not shooting back at us. But in this case, during the Vietnam War, they were somehow able to return our own fire and use it against us. Both our bullets and the missiles we launched at them. And that made me suspicious that perhaps China maybe even has their own set of UFOs, but nobody wants to let anybody else know. You know, they're not going to go into battles with this stuff unless it's their backs are to the wall.
Right. It's interesting because I think as Americans, we tend to think all the UFOs are here.
Which,
you know, it's kind of small-minded of us.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, something the size of Asia, a continent. And of course, they've got UFO sightings and countries that don't share all their news. You know, could absolutely be keeping some of these technologies under wraps. You know, never revealing the source.
Well, the situation is much like the situation when we developed the atomic bomb. You know, we wanted to keep that secret. We're going to keep that secret. And then we used it. So, It's not secret anymore.
Yeah, and secret's out.
We're in kind of the same situation here. We could keep this secret as long as we don't have to use it in defense or offense, for that matter. And so it's been possible to provide disinformation over the years, and everybody's confused and nobody knows for sure what the heck is going on. And I'm saying maybe they're growing tired of keeping up this charade, and then, you know, they're going to get to the point where they say, hey, you know what, we could do better by letting everybody have this, and we've already got a 70-80 year head start on everybody else. Why not? Let's get this out there so we can start building commercial aircraft that can fly like this and make this world a better world. That's what I hope.
How would you define a word you used earlier, slip wave? Mm-hmm. And I think something called the slip wave spatial
drive. Spatial bias drive.
Bias drive. Thank you.
Well, the slip wave is one of the discoveries that's in my theory. One of the many questions I had in order to unite the fields was, I thought, well, you know, particles do something that's very important. They move, and they move without little rockets or jets to propel them. They move on their own, independently. How do they do that? How does a photon fly, you know, billions of miles from stars at the speed of light, never slowing down unless it goes in the gravitational field, and when it comes out, it speeds up again. So it's moving relative to space. So It's interacting with that medium. So What is required to make that particle move? A pressure difference. If you look in nature, pressure difference is what makes everything go. Pressure difference on the wings creates lift. There's low pressure on the top side and high pressure on the bottom side. Pressure in a combustible engine makes the car go. You know, the expansion of the explosion of the piston.
The fuel. Yeah.
Pressure. Everywhere, pressure in the hose makes the water shoot out. Pressure. So I said to myself, pressure must be what makes particles move. So I have to find a pressure gradient. So the first thing I did was find something like an example in nature, like the bubble in water. A bubble is a low density thing. The water is higher density. And it's a gradient because at the very bottom of the liquid, the pressure is the greatest. So the bubble gets pushed up from the bottom, always goes to the top. So it has a velocity through the medium. This is common knowledge. Everybody knows that's how it works. And so I thought, well, then particles must have the gradient, pressure gradient inside them, because the medium in space is isotropic, which means it's the same in every direction. So a particle isn't going to get that, like the bubble, you know, rising to the surface, because it's the same in all directions. So the pressure gradient has to be inside the particle itself. So I had to look.
By its nature.
Yes, by its structure. So I had to analyze the structure, going back to the time where people talked about vortexes, particles were vortexes. And I kept asking myself, why did they pick vortex? And then I looked at the structure, and it made sense to me all of a sudden. That twist, as you twist, remember the Scilipoti experiment, stretches. So from the beginning of the twist, it's stretching more and more to the end of the particle, where it's stretched the most, and that creates the pressure gradient within the particle. So the particle gets pushed from the back forward, because you got the higher pressure at the front and the least amount of pressure at the back. So it's like a bubble, and it has a velocity in whatever direction that structure is facing along the x-axis. So that is the slip wave. It's a pressure gradient that exists inside of electrons, photons, quarks, you name it, any particle you want to think of. They're all electromagnetic. They're all built basically the same way. There's only different configurations, you know, a 90 degree or 180 degree inversions or whatever. That's what the slip wave is. It's a pressure gradient that exists inside of particles. It's what causes particles to move. And this is necessary to have a universe that works and functions.
And to make light travel, like you said, you know, right. It's not necessarily following gravity, though I think you mentioned it can be manipulated a little bit by that. All of these ideas and the tie into technology can be found in your book. And
yes.
Where can people find a book, and where can people find you?
My website is www.super-relativity.com. And on the very front page, there's a link going to Amazon where the book is at. You can buy it on Amazon. Or if you live in the United States, I can send you a signed copy if you like. But
That's very cool.
Yeah, but definitely, you know, Amazon is also available, and everybody has an account there, and it's easy.
That's right. We need to give Jeff Bezos some more money.
Yeah.
I love Amazon. I mean,
I use it a lot, and especially in these times when you don't want to go out and buy everything.
Exactly.
So. Exactly.
And that book is Master of Reality, not the Black Sabbath record.
Not the Black Sabbath.
Mistaken with that. thank you for having a sense of humor about that.
No problem.
But that's great. We've got your website. You mentioned something, I think, and we were talking about near-death experiences and a change in them. Mm-hmm. Wrap up with that a little bit.
Well, part of my research definitely went into the spiritual realm, because my theory basically is an intelligent design theory. It's basically saying, at the very core, the foundation of reality, somebody had to create particles. Somebody had to create the Big Bang. And all I'm saying is the creator did all that work, and it does it all the time. And in these near-death experiences, people are describing how he does that. And God is actually saying, I create not only this universe, but infinite amount of universes, and there's dimensions. And in my book, I talk about building a Stargate and how you could connect to these other dimensions and so forth, and all these other universes. So basically, the NDE people are, and I have some of them on my website and my blog, I give their instances where they talk about God's describing exactly how he creates universes. And in my book, there's something called the signature of God. And this is what the quarks do inside the neutron and the proton. They execute this special pattern of motion. It's a trefoil pattern of motion, and this is what binds the particles together and creates gravitational field. So that came from an NDE that I got the idea to look for based on something Einstein said, which basically he said, I want to know the thoughts of God. And when I read that, I says, well, how can I do that? I mean, that would be the best way, if I could read God's mind. But he's not going to let you do that unless he lets you do that. And he communicates right. That, which basically happens when people have near-death experiences. So I
looked. Do you find that pattern to be like sacred geometry?
It is a sacred atom? Geometry. Yes, it is without that. And there's a person, Claire Dennis, who has a website and works on that. And I've talked with her, and I said, hey, I know what that pattern is. And you even say it in your book. God is telling you, I am the energy that forms matter. That fits perfectly with my theory. It's what creates mass and gravity is very simple and straightforward. It's a simple sentence. It goes like this. Fundamental unbalanced charges moving in an accelerated manner causes the gravity, and it does this by causing a contraction of space around that particle. So the trefoil motion is rapid acceleration of particles. So that's what's causing a rotational sphere, because the trefoil pattern is precessing, and scientists are going to understand what I'm saying. I'm really realizing most people are not understanding this part, but that rapid rotation of a sphere, this tiny sphere called the neutron or the proton, causes a contraction at the perimeter, and that's what causes the gravity. And I discovered that pattern by looking at NDEs, and I found this one NDE that was the sacred geometry that I believed Einstein was looking for as well. And I put that in the book, and I says, that's how he did it. Yeah, he did it. It's exactly that way. And I go into high detail with that information. So you're right. That's a good point to bring up. The NDE of Lynn Claire Dennis led the way to the discovery of the signature.
That's excellent. And I thank you. And thank you for coming on Bigfoot and a Bunny, Mark. I okay. Really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And we'd love to have you back again. We'll talk some more.
Hey, maybe we'll come back with Tamara or something. She could tell you some interesting stuff about all of this theory, and because the other side has been very forthcoming.
Absolutely. We're very open to that. We love spiritual stuff and, you know, the quote unquote paranormal. So I love the tie-ins to it, because I think there's a science behind all of it. So it's wonderful.
Science and religion come together. In the end, they will be one in the same.
Right. And the techniques will be, you know, between ideas of religion, magic, sorcery, time travel. It'll all make sense at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Thank you again.
Okay. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, us too. We appreciate it. That's all the time we've got left for Bigfoot and the Bunny this week. Next week, we'll be back with Kristen. And we have Shay Carroll coming on, who's the founder of Paranormal Buzz Radio and a paranormal investigator and a friend of ours. We're excited to have her on. And that's all we've got for tonight, folks. Also, I think we'll have an EVP for you guys next week to play. I've been kind of holding off on that till Kristen came back, and we'll tell you about an investigation we did recently. Thank you. We'll see you next week.